But I want to start with a question that may seem irrelevant, but I promise we'll get around to why I'm asking. It's kind of related a little bit to what I told the kids, but how many football fans do we have in the room today? Football fans? Not many, man. There were a few more in the first service. How many anti-football people do we have? Like, you just don't like football. And yeah, there's a few more of those. But anyway, I'm a football fan. So sorry, this mic is moving on my ear here. Let me fix that so we don't get all the feedback. I love football. It's one of my favorite sports. I think it's a lot of fun. But the truth is, a football game is about 3 hours long. Today is the opening weekend of football for the NFL. I'm really excited to watch some games later. You might be like, bit boring, not interested, and that's okay. To each his own. You have your things you love. That's good. But I love to watch a football game. But it's about 3 hours long, and essentially there are about 11 minutes of action, they say, in a football game. 11 minutes in 3 hours. A play lasts roughly 7 seconds, you know, and so they figure the math, it's about 11 minutes of action. So I understand why people might say, oh, that's boring, there's so much of this other stuff going on, there's so much time between the plays. And, you know, if you got a DVR and you want to skip ahead, you can skip through a lot of that stuff. But I like what's going on around on the sidelines, and I like watching what's going on in the huddle. Because here's why. I used to play football. I kind of know, I've been there, I've been in the game, I know what it's like, I know what they're doing, I'm not at that level at all, I wasn't that good, but I understand a little bit about what's going on behind the scenes, and I've been in the game, and so I have a whole different appreciation for what's going on. If you haven't had that, maybe then, you know, you're like, yeah, I'm not spending 3 hours to see 11 minutes. I get it. Football's not what we're here to talk about this morning, but I want to talk about, you know, how football, to me, has great entertainment value. And for you, you have something that's very entertaining to you. That you love to watch or do, or you know, you love to just be part of. Now, I want to talk about something that can sometimes be considered very boring, and I even find very boring at times, and that is church services. Okay. Now, before you panic and say the new pastor just said church is boring, you need to hear the whole message. So don't tune out right now because that is a bad idea. Because I don't believe it should be, but I think it can be. And I think for many of us, church can become dull and unfulfilling and dreary and something we just do out of duty or responsibility. And we kind of can become a spectator of church if we're not careful. We can sit and watch, and that's what I'm talking about. I find that dreadfully dull. I'm not interested in going to a church and sitting and watching some other people worship and some other people, you know, talk. Like that, I have better things I could do with my time from a purely entertainment point of view. That's key, right? And I think we all could agree that if we're looking for the best entertainment on a Sunday morning, there's probably better things you could do with your time, right? There's some more entertaining choices if it's all about that. But we obviously know where I'm going, that it's not all about that. In fact, I believe that the church, not church, but the church, us and our involvement together should be a vibrant and fulfilling experience and part of your life. But for why is it not that way for many? That's what I want to talk about this morning. And I hope that I'm preaching to the choir. I hope that you're sitting there saying, well, this isn't for me. But maybe you've gone through a dry spell. Maybe you're frustrated with how you feel engaging in church, and you come and you feel a little disconnected and you feel like a spectator. That's okay. This isn't judgmental in any sort of way. We all go through those seasons where we have to understand. But I want you to grasp in this passage what we see and what I think the Bible teaches us about what it means to be part of a thriving and fulfilling church experience. And so I've looked at surveys, many different church surveys that have been done, asking people why they don't go to church. And one of the top answers on every survey, usually top three, on every single one I've ever seen, says something to the effect that church is boring and unfulfilling. Why? What is the cause of this? You know, I'll give you some glimpses as we go. I have a feeling it's our consumer lifestyle and our general, sense of that. But there's more to that, right? See, a few years ago, I went from church pastoral ministry became a professor for the last 4 years in teaching ministry, still a ministry role, but not a Sunday morning role. And I found myself for the first time going to church as a congregant, not as a pastor. And I realized something, that if I just sat and watched, I was like, this is kind of dull. This is what I've been doing to people for the last 20 years. What, you know, oh man. And here I am back in church ministry, really excited about that. And but I'll tell you what, I'm going to be real honest with you. I'd much rather be here than there, in a way. Let me tell you what, let me go there. What I'm saying is that to me, it's I can't just be a spectator. That has no appeal to me. I remember attending a church one time, a big church that I went to, I wasn't in a church at the time, and I was looking for a church to worship at. And I went for a couple months. It was in Toronto, and no one ever reached out. I sent in letters to the church saying, I'd like to get involved. I'd like to be part of this team or that team. No one ever reached out. No one ever got back to me. Well, then I found another church, and I went to another church, and they immediately, day one, were like, oh, we'd love to have you involved in worship. We'd love to have you involved. And that was my church home. I wanted to get connected. See, just sitting, you know, and watching never appealed to me. And so that's what I want us to talk about this morning, because I want us to think about what makes church better than football. What makes church better than fill in the blank, your favorite thing to do? What will keep you coming back and excited about what God is doing and enjoying the reason? And so what's the formula, if you will, for an incredible, thriving, life-giving congregation of people and a community of believers that are on fire for Jesus and changing the world? And I think that's the key. So did church start this way? Was church always, you know, just like it is now? Well, the truth is, we can get a glimpse of that with a passage we just heard read. I want to read it one more time, and I want you to think about if this sounds exciting and energizing to you. And it says in Acts 2:42, this description of the early church says, all the believers devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship and to sharing in meals, including the Lord's Supper, and to prayer. A deep sense of awe came over them all, and the apostles performed many miracles and miraculous signs and wonders, and all the believers met together in one place and shared everything they had. They sold their property and possessions and shared the money with those in need. They worshiped together at the temple each day, met in homes for the Lord's Supper, and shared their meals with great joy, catch that, and generosity, all the while praising God and enjoying the goodwill of the people. And I love the way it ends, and it says, and each day the Lord added to their fellowship those who were being saved. Now that sounds exciting to me. It doesn't give us a lot of what, it doesn't tell us a lot about what they were doing and what their gatherings looked like. We don't have a lot of detail, but something special happened in those days. And I believe that it still happens in many places, and we need it to happen with us and here. So let's look at some of the things in this passage that are obvious and clear to us. First of all, the early church was devoted to learning. Like I talked to the kids, they were devoted to coming together and getting prepared, practicing preparation so that they could go out into the world and tell people about Jesus. They were committed to that. And so that the word devoted here in this passage specifically means that they were consistently persisting in these activities. This was not an occasional thing they did on the side. This was something they were committed to. It wasn't casual. This was commitment. They were all in. Something special was happening here. So it wasn't a simple 1 hour on Sunday morning. They were giving so much more to this. They were all in, and they were changing the whole structure of their lives because of what was happening. First they were devoted to learning. Then we see that they were devoted or committed to true fellowship. Now the Bible uses a special word called koinonia here in the Greek that speaks to a kind of fellowship that is only really found in the Bible. And it's this kind of fellowship that is, again, just like we were just talking about, is so much more than just gathering together. We often think of fellowship. I don't know what you think of, but when I hear the word fellowship, I think of getting together for a potluck meal, right? Church. That's kind of, we meet in the fellowship hall, or do you call that anytime? Has that ever been the name of the room downstairs? I don't know, but every church seems to have a fellowship hall, and that you kind of get connected to these simple concepts, but fellowship is so much more to that in this passage. They were spending time together in fellowship and communion, but they were doing it, and so what was happening is they were doing life together, not just Sunday morning together, they were doing life together, and what they were doing was they're bringing holy practices into common areas of life. See, they were bringing the church home. The church was not just, again, an hour long on Sunday morning. It was everything. It was at the dinner table. And so what you see is that the holy is made common. The holy is brought to the dinner table. And I think there's something unique and special about that. The early church was expectant. That's the next thing we see. They were in awe of what God was doing, and they expected God to continue to do those things. They had no doubt that God was going to do great things in their midst, and so they moved in that way with confidence. They expected God to move, believed that God would move, and therefore they anticipated God moving. That's exciting. I don't know about you, but when I really begin to believe that God is listening to my prayers and that he is doing something in the midst of my life and the actions and the things that I'm doing for the kingdom, that's exciting. That's not spectating. That's playing the game, right? That's getting involved. And so, how would we pray differently if we really believed that God was not only hearing us, but with us and directing our steps and our prayers? And so that's what the next thing the early church was doing is they were fully invested, not just financially. They were invested with their fellowship and their time and their lives and their homes, but they were invested with their giving. They sold their property and possessions and shared money with those in need. It doesn't say they sold everything or all their property, but they sacrificially gave so that the work of the kingdom could advance. See, I think it's really crucial that we understand they were investors, not customers, right? I'll tell you what, if you come to church as a customer, you're going to be disappointed because that's not what it is, right? It's an investment. They sacrificed things for the church. They gave up comforts, invested their lives in it deeply and sacrificially. And that's what brought this kind of joy. See, the early church also was loved by all the people. This one concerns me a little bit because I don't see in our world and our culture, the church universal, I don't see us earning the goodwill of all the people. In fact, I hope we do as a congregation, but generally speaking, if you ask people what they think of church, you get a negative response. That concerns me greatly. We need to be, one of the things I tell people is, when people don't know how to represent Christ in a world or in a mission situation, or when someone asks them about Jesus, I say, just be a positive encounter with Jesus. Let them experience a positive encounter with a Christian. That's so crucial, right? That people experience positivity and they experience a loving connection with someone who follows Jesus. We don't need anything profound sometimes, just a great experience with a Christian. So the love of God was overflowing from them to the common world around them. It wasn't just the people in the church that gave goodwill. It was those outside the church that were experiencing and having goodwill toward the people. Now, we know there was persecution, and you might think, well, man, they went through some hard times and suffering. Yes, but that wasn't necessarily the common people. That was kind of the governments and the, things that were threatened by this upstart, kind of new faith that was coming in and Jesus had started. And what's the result? And this is where it gets to the heart of the matter for me. We see clearly that the early church was blessed by God. God was doing great things. People were being saved and coming to know Jesus, experiencing freedom from sin and death in their midst. So of course, we want to replicate this. I don't know about you, but I want to experience this kind of church. I want to experience this kind of impact in the world around us. I want people to come and experience the love of Jesus. So what can we do? What causes that to happen in someone's life? If I could create, a really simple formula that says do this and all these things will happen, I'd be pretty famous. I'd have a best-selling book, right? If I could just say do these steps, take these steps, and your church will be like this first century church and people will come to Jesus. And many people have tried, and there's a lot of great ideas out there, and they're not bad, but for some reason there's something that goes beyond just a formula. So I want to let's back up for a minute and ask, what are some possible reasons that people are experiencing church in this kind of negative way sometimes? What are some of the things that we might be tempted to say, if we just do this, or if we just solve this problem, maybe this would go away. Because I think it's easy to kind of look for the simple solution. I don't think the solution to this is easy. I don't think it's simple. But maybe this kind of church happens, a dull and unfulfilling experience happens because we're so over-entertained. You know, we are an overstimulated people and culture. There is so much to distract us. I don't know about you, but I'm easily distracted anyway. And so I can find lots to distract my attention away from what maybe I really ought to be doing at times if I'm not careful. And the rise of media and entertainment, there's so much to distract us. I literally have an app where I can watch every single football game this week if I want to, right? That's a lot of time. I don't have that kind of time, but I could easily be distracted by these things. So yes, I think that's part of the complication, and there's a lot of little complications here. I think our culture is oversaturated with entertainment and those things, and that causes us sometimes to expect the church to be also an entertaining venue. But I don't think that's the only reason we find and may find church boring. You know, but I think that could be one part of the issue. Another part of the issue may be that this kind of church may not happen because people can now access the best services in the world. Maybe people are a little disappointed in church because if you want to, you can go stream the most wealthy, high-powered, energetic service with the best preachers in the world all at your fingertips anytime today. So you can go listen to any band, any service, anywhere in the world, because almost everybody, we're online right now, right? Everybody's online. And so there's so much selection and opportunity. Maybe that's why people are finding the local church a little dull, because they're looking for it to match and compare it to these other things. And I think that's a challenge. And I think we have to wrestle with that temptation sometimes to compare. But I think there's something more profound here too. Another possibility is that maybe because we've stopped doing all the extra stuff. How many of you remember the days, I'm assuming it happened here as well as everywhere else, when there was a Sunday school hour, there was a church hour, there was a Sunday evening service, there was a midweek Bible study, there was discipleship classes and things going on, you know, and you were at church more. Because how many remember the days when there was just a lot more opportunities to get involved? Now, life is busy, and there's reasons some of that is scaled back, and maybe some of that will do some of those things, and I think they're good, but perhaps the loss and the decline in that kind of discipleship programming is part of it. Maybe we're missing out on some of that. I don't know. The thing is, I don't feel like any of these things on their own, even dealt with, are going to change it. And we start thinking about easy solutions. Like maybe if we put up fancy laser lights and put on a big show and it's super, you know, we spend thousands of dollars on making, you know, this look like a concert hall or whatever. You know, hundreds of thousands it would cost these days. The money's, everything's real expensive. Or we play the right songs that everybody knows and loves. Or we have the best small groups or best youth group or children's ministry. And, you know, what if we do all those things right? Is that gonna solve the problem? And I don't believe those are the answers. I think they're all good things. Please understand that. We want to do our best, and we want to have great music, and we want to put our effort in on those things, and we want to have best small groups. I want our youth group to be great and children's ministry to be great. But I don't think that's the heart of the issue. We could even be tempted to just try to replicate what we see in the Old Testament church. Let's just do it exactly like they did. The problem is there's not a lot of detail there, right? You know, maybe if everybody sells everything we own and we become a commune and we all live together and have all our meals together, and everyone's like, can you say creepy? We're not doing that. It's not feasible. It doesn't work today. That wouldn't be the answer. So what is the answer? Well, I think the answer is found here when you start understanding the text and how Luke wrote it and how God gave it to us through Luke. Then we start to see that he wrote it a little different than we can sometimes understand in a cursory or a simple reading of the text. Now, again, this is where the professor side is going to come out. So if you don't care about the reasoning behind what I want to share, then you can tune out for a few minutes. But what Luke is doing here, I taught a class on the literature of the New Testament. He's using a literary device called a retroactive summary statement. And what that means is that he's given us, how many of you have seen the TV shows that give you kind of a teaser at the beginning of the show where they show you the action at the end of the show? They start saying, oh, here's what's going to happen at the end. There's this big chase scene. The hero's about to get, you know, seriously hurt or is in serious trouble. He's caught by the bad guys. And then, boom, they cut back to the beginning 3 days earlier or whatever. And you're like, what's going to happen? You know, leaves you with this sense of anticipation. Well, Luke's doing something like that. Not exactly the same, but what he's doing is he's giving us the big picture at the beginning of the book of Acts. He's saying the church was like this. Not perfect. Even in other places in Acts, he talks about some of the warts and negative things going on, even some of the arguments the early church had. They didn't always agree on everything. But he's saying that they had the goodwill of the people, and these things were all happening. But this statement is meant to be a summary of the early church after all the account of Acts. Not before. But when we read linear, we read it and go, oh, this was happening. And then we read all about the persecution and the trials and the troubles and Paul's 10,000 plus kilometers of missionary journey. Like incredible exploits of the church and what they did to expand the gospel and go share the good news of Jesus all over that part of the world. The incredible things they faced. Shipwrecks and all kinds of stonings and, you know, some really hard things. The church was scattered. If you look at Acts 8, there's a scattering of the church where they're persecuted and they all get spread out all over the area, but they take Jesus with them. They're not comfortably forming and building these little great comfortable congregations. They certainly didn't have nice chairs and lights and all that we have today. And I'm not saying that's wrong. I'm just saying that's not what we're looking at here. And so Luke is telling us, though, that with all of that, go read the book of Acts. It's a fascinating book. If you don't know where to start in the Bible, Acts is a great place to start. And so, most people recommend the gospel. Read a gospel and then read Luke and then Acts. He wrote both. And then you get this picture of the church going through all of its trials and difficulties in the beginning. And the end result is actually what Luke starts with in this retroactive summary. And so, what does that tell us? And I think it helps resolve a bit of the issue. What it doesn't tell us, here's what it doesn't tell us. It doesn't tell us that just eating together in our homes and having communion together is going to create this thriving church. What it tells us is that the people on the mission of God through all of the difficulties, challenges, missionary journeys, and persecutions, and everything they faced, they experienced this incredible fellowship. They experienced something radical, life-changing that is still why we gather today. It existed, it has lasted for thousands of years, not because they just had a really tight-knit, close community. That's not why. It's not just because they listened to the apostles' teaching. It's because they went out and told the world about Jesus. That's the difference here. See, Acts tells the story of a church that goes out into the world with difficulty and pain and struggle, but they had one singular purpose. They were on a mission. And if you read the book of Acts, they were about one thing. And it wasn't creating a church gathering or community. What they were all about was telling people about Jesus. That's what built their incredible community. It wasn't because they did all the right things. It was because they were on a mission to tell people about the good news of Jesus Christ. See, I think the way we read linear has caused this passage to be misinterpreted at times to read like this. The church had this great community and fellowship, and therefore they went out and told the world about Jesus. But I don't think Luke meant for us to read it that way, and I don't think we ought to read it that way. In fact, I believe what we read in here is that because they went out and told people about Jesus, they enjoyed an incredible fellowship and community with one another. See, I think that fellowship and community and what we all want to experience with one another is the result of our mission. It's the result of playing the game. It's just like I said earlier, the practice seems pretty dull and boring if the game never happens, right? And if we aren't careful, we can read this passage as if it's a means to an end. Let's just form great community. And I think I really did this for many years. I believe that if we just form great small groups and everybody just, you know, had real special community times together as a church, then that would inspire us all to go out and tell people about Jesus. But I'm convinced now that's not the way it works. I'm convinced now that the way it works is that when we go out and tell people about Jesus together on mission, then that great community happens as a result, not as the starting point. And so I believe that we are looking at a result here. They didn't thrive because they had a great worship band or a nice building. They weren't thriving because of that. They were thriving because they were passionately telling people about the good news of Jesus Christ. And so the result of sharing the gospel with the people around us is an incredible community. And we all want that. The problem is we kind of want it first. And it's tempting to say, let's have that first, and then we'll go on mission. But I think the opposite will generate a lot more excitement. See, you can't create fellowship and community without mission. That's what I believe. I believe that you need a purpose. You need to have the game in hand. You need to know why you're doing the hard work. I know when I have a purpose behind what I do, it's far more engaging. It drives me to complete what I'm doing. You know, I love to read, but I'll tell you what, I read a whole lot more when I was doing my doctorate studies, and I had to do it to accomplish this paper or goal. It was assigned, when it was assigned to me and there was a purpose and a goal at the end of the road, I devoured books, right? Way faster than I would just freely when it's at my own convenience and whim, right? Because it's a lot easier. But think of it like this. Imagine the football game. Now, I know some of you don't like football, but bear with me. Imagine the football game like this. The team gathers together. They come out on the field. They all huddle up. They get together. They put their hands in. They talk about it. You know, they all break. Let's go. They all walk back to the sidelines. And then they come out again. They huddle up. All right, here's what you're going to do. You're going to a new play. Everybody, yeah. And then they walk back to the sideline. And then they come back and they huddle up. And listen, church, it is very easy for us to operate that way. We keep huddling up on Sunday morning. We talk about what we're going to do and we're going to change the world. And then we go back to the sideline. And if we're not careful, that we may never snap the ball and make a play. Now, what your play is and what my play is, they're going to be different. We got to talk about that. You know, there's lots of ways to get involved in the game, but I don't know about you, but that sounds like an awful boring game. And if you're finding church unfulfilling, maybe it's because you're just huddling without the play. Maybe you're practicing, but you haven't quite got in the game. See, the early church, they were all in on the game. And they decided, we need to practice. We need to gather. The church was the result of the game. The church was, let's gather to prepare so we can go out and tell people about Jesus. The gathering was only for the sake of the game. It drove their decisions. It drove their finances. It changed how they lived their lives. It changed how they ate their meals. It changed everything to accomplish the win, to get the game. We talked about with the kids, why do we want to play the game? Because we want to win. Well, the win here is to tell people the good news of Jesus Christ. So maybe for some of us to find that fulfilling church experience, and this is young people, old people, children, everyone, to enjoy the gathering, there has to be a game plan. There has to be something we're preparing for. If it's just spectating, if there's no plan to snap the ball, oh, that can be hard. Why have I been committed to church for over 40 years of my life? Because I'm in the game, and I'm excited about being in the game. I can't imagine anything else. I just can't be a spectator. It has no appeal to me whatsoever. Church is boring when you're a spectator. It's just not a spectator activity. There's great spectator activities out there. I love those. Those are fun, you know. There's nothing wrong with a good being a fan of something, but church is not for fans. It's for followers, right? And so think about the simple things like prayer. Oh my goodness. Prayer's pretty dull if you're just a spectator. I'm sorry. The last thing I want to do is just listen to someone pray on their own and not be connected and engaged in what's going on. That's not fun. That doesn't inspire me. If I'm involved, a whole different thing. Spectating worship, just watching worship. Sorry, I can listen to better music on my phone. Like, that's not what it's about, you know? It's not about that. Giving, you know, I'm not really interested in giving as a spectator, but when you're invested, it changes everything. And serving, well, sir, you're just not going to serve. You're not going to be involved. You're not going to help this place function and be part of the coaching staff or the team. You know, like, you're not going to join the, you know, we need water boys, we need everything. We need people getting involved on all areas of and aspects of what we do to get ready to go out and change the world. You're just not going to do that if you're just a spectator. And I believe if you just sit there, you will eventually say, yeah, this isn't for me. Because it's never the way God intended it. But you engage. If you engage in prayer, it's life-giving and it gives you hope. If you engage in worship and you honestly say and get yourself in an attitude saying, God, you're first, I lift you up, I praise your name when we sing. If you literally connect with God in worship, that's God-honoring and it's joyful. When you give engagement and you care and invested in what the church is doing, that's meaningful participation. And when you engage in service, then you end up actually fulfilling God's call in your life in all kinds of different ways. God has a plan and a call for each of us, and he'll direct that. I wrote my whole dissertation on it, so I can talk for hours about that another time. But maybe it's time that we move from being customers to becoming investors. Now, some of you clearly are already doing this, if not all of you, and I thank you for your investment. This is not meant to make us feel bad. This is just saying the answer to an exciting and fulfilling church experience is to become an investor, right? To invest not just in the church, in the mission of God. That's a big difference. Let's invest in what God is doing. Customers attend church for what they can get out of it. But an investor contributes to the mission of God through the work of the church for the sake of the world. One is incredibly boring, but one is an incredible adventure. So maybe it's time that we stop inviting people to church and we invite people to Christ. Think about it. What are we really offering the world? Is it great flashy church services? We can't compete with the rest big mega churches, and you know, that's not what we're doing. It's not a business. We're not selling a product. But we have hope and we have life and we have the secret to victory over sin and death. We really do. And if you've found that, you know what I'm talking about. If you haven't, you're at the right place, and we hope to share it with you. But we're not going to reach the world with great Sunday services. We're going to reach the world with the good news of Jesus Christ. That's the difference maker. What we have to offer is something incredibly valuable, but it's not a show. And if we try to offer a show, I'm afraid we will fail. But if we offer people Jesus, that's an incredible offering. As the team and the band comes back up, I want to ask you, what's your play? You don't have to know right now. You don't even have to, that's a journey. And that takes time, and it takes prayer, and it takes consideration. It takes listening to God's voice through others and through his word and through, you know, just discerning. Talk to me about it. I'd love to talk to you about how God is leading you to get involved in his mission, wherever that may be in your workplace. But it's what we do. Every one of us needs to be ready when the ball snaps. What's your play? Where are you going? Are you running out for a deep pass? Are you protecting the quarterback? Are you helping on the sidelines, which is still an important part of the game, right? What are you doing? What's your play? Because everybody has a part to play in this. And I'm telling you that when you get in the game, it's a whole different experience. It's night and day different. If you're a spectator, we welcome you. Love you, glad you're here. But I'm telling you, if you want to enjoy and thrive and be really a part of this thing we call church, it's an investment. It's a participation. Join the team. We want to have you. And all things, what is your play? What are you going to do? let's sing together this song that's a kind of a commitment of investment to lay our lives down for the Lord. Let's stand, and maybe as we sing this song, you need to say, God, I'm going to make a play. Whatever that is in your heart, you can come forward, you can stay there, you can pray, you can sing, but engage with this. Don't just watch. Please, don't just watch the song. Connect with God and spend some time with God during this song as we consider what we can do together as a team.